Welcome, everybody, to Commercial Risk Europe's podcast on how risk managers can tackle the challenges of ESG. My name is Liz Booth, and I work with Commercial Risk. But to look at this subject, we have an expert in the field, Dr. Bev Adams, Consulting Director, Head of Climate and Catastrophe Resilience at Marsh. Welcome, Bev. Good to hear from you today. Our first question for you is, what would you say is the top advice that you would provide to our risk manager audience when it comes to companies trying to establish their ESG credentials? Do you have any practical examples of the work you've already undertaken with clients?
Thanks, Liz. It's so nice to be here today because in my world, ESG and climate are what I work on every single day. And perhaps I should start answering you with the statement that for a business, if you don't assess your ESG and climate risk, somebody else will. So for any of the audience out there who are almost stuck at that point thinking, do I need to act? When should I act? The time is now. And I think one of the things that we've learned over our work in the last couple of years, literally supporting our clients with ESG and climate, are that there are definitely some things that mean that that journey can be easier and that journey can be harder. And so my job today, as I see it, is to help impart some of those words of wisdom so that those in the audience can begin thinking about it. A couple of the things that I've really noticed is that we're here today speaking with colleagues who are risk professionals. And I think that they shouldn't underestimate their role in this ESG and climate journey. And people may struggle to think, why should I have a seat at that ESG table? Well, it's actually pretty clear. ESG has significant insurance implications. And while those are still very much being established and coming out of the woodwork, I fully expect our clients, our colleagues, to be being asked questions around what that looks like. And whether that is that climate is affecting flooding and it's going to get worse, whether it's that with ESG being a major governance point, D&O is going to be changing and morphing, whether it's more specialty types of insurances, all of those factors mean that they're going to need to be ready to field those kinds of questions. And that's a very good reason why they should have a seat at that table if they don't already. Then there are some other important dimensions to why they should be there. Number one is that I've worked most of my career on natural catastrophes, and climate and ESG, they are obviously the new wave of work on NatCat. It's NatCat, but with a climate lens, slightly different risks. But the reality is that a lot of the background that people have from their days working on property and casualty insurance, where they've had to assess NatCat risk, that modelling, that knowledge is worth its weight in gold to the people on the board and the leadership within the business. And therefore, if they can help guide people on their journey with climate, help them become just a little bit more fluent in some of those things that our risk management colleagues now just have as part of their toolkit, that will be really helpful. Another thing that I think has come up with me is that often risk managers and insurance risk managers may not have been automatically having a seat at the ESG table. However, they've heard the word climate, they've heard the word modelling, and certainly one big client, a big fizzy drinks manufacturer we work with, they started out doing some really great work with us on climate modelling. In parallel, there were separate initiatives on ESG and sustainability. But when the teams for ESG and sustainability found out about the knowledge that the risk managers had already and the work that they were doing, they actually pulled it into a collaborative project where that was then delivered across all three of those different special interest areas. And what I would say is that, coming back to my first point, sort of my number one top tip, there are many reasons why our risk management professional colleagues should have a seat at that table. And if you don't already, please fight for it.
Thank you very much, Bev. Looking at the recent EMIC annual survey, which I know that Marsh was a partner in that, one of the biggest concerns cited was around governance. What would you say that that means in reality, and what practical advice could you provide for risk managers to understand what they need to do to comply with regulations in this ESG space.
So you're absolutely right that the number one finding was that governance is a major concern. But if we unpick that, it looks like on paper it's the G of ESG, you know, E being environment, S being social, and G being governance. But if you lift up the hood, what the G really relates to is the new wave of reporting that businesses are being asked to do, both mandatory and also voluntary. And the mandatory side of it is very much linked into TCFD and the new wave of climate reporting. And so that's where everybody's focus has been. And truth be told, businesses have had to get up to speed really quickly on this. And it's been mandated by government, and they've been given quite aggressive timelines. However, perhaps the guidance around how to do it, what to do, is not quite so detailed. Yes, we do have four pillars of work that we need to be able to address, including risk management, of course. That is one of the four pillars in its entirety, along with the thing that I spend a lot of time doing, which is scenario modelling. And that's quite complicated. As I've explained, it's something that risk managers know, but as a business, climate modelling is a different beast. It has to be approached in a different way with different models. And so that TCFD piece has been bending and stretching people to now very quickly upskill and deliver an entire TCFD analysis. And so I think that's one reason why that's come as a number one headline within the survey, because people are having to do it. But what I would counsel is that alongside that mandatory piece, when we look at ESG and we look at what good looks like, coming back to your first question, one of the things that we notice is that how do you make your business have credibility in the ESG space? And one of the ways that businesses are doing that is through voluntary declarations and voluntary reporting. You may have heard of some of the different terms out there like CDP reporting, science-based targets. Increasingly, businesses are not just having a statement about their journey to net zero. They're increasingly considering statements around other elements of ESG, all the way from diversity and inclusion to climate resilience. And that is really key, but it's very much more the mandatory side of it. But all of that packaged together, I think, is why that's number one on the minds of our risk management colleagues at the moment.
Thank you. Talking about climate for a second, are there any big changes risk managers need to be aware of? And what support could the likes of Marsh provide to help risk managers?
So when it comes to climate and the way that we're looking at it, I think the bigger question is, how are you going to assess that climate risk? Once you know which of your properties have that climate risk, what are you going to do about it? And that comes full circle. And I like to say that we at Marsh take a 360 degree approach to managing climate risk. And that also, by the way, is aligned with how we do ERM, because we don't just do modelling, we see it all the way through to resilience and controls. So taking that climate piece, those of people who are starting off on that journey, they will, for TCFD reasons, need to do scenario modelling. They may not have done it before. And so one of the first things that they'll need to do is choose, with proper insight, what are the right models to be using. And I, for my sins, spent a lot of last year evaluating about 15 different physical and transition climate models so that we could help people make a balanced judgment on the right direction for them. And that's, I guess, step one. So choose a model, choose it carefully, make sure that you run it in a way that you fully understand, no black boxes. And out of that, you'll then find which of your assets or which parts of your business have risk. And then the next step is to more deeply understand why. And that's bringing us to that point where in the past, people have done for example, risk engineering surveys to understand why they have fire risk, we're now talking about a new wave of surveys which need to look at climate risk. And that climate risk may be related to heat stress, it may be related to flooding, but it may also be related to other knock-on effects. And we have this sort of term primary climate effects, which might be flooding, heat stress, drought, etc. And then we have secondary ones, which might be related to things like water availability. You also need to be thinking about how to weave in your supply chain to all of that too, because you can be as solid as a rock, but if you do have issues within different bits of your supply chain, then that is going to obviously impact you heavily. And then also it's going to, as ESG reporting continues, begin to cause people to doubt your own ability to manage these risks. And so let's say you've done some surveys, you've got your arms around why you have risk. Then it comes, as I said, full circle to thinking, what do I do about it? And that's where resilience is the word. Resilience and also opportunity, because we're not just talking doom and gloom. Quite often with businesses, there will be climate creating opportunities. And I've spoken about water availability as one. People are going to get thirstier. Where are they going to need to be more drinks supplied? If you were going to be meeting that demand, where should you go to do that? There are all kinds of questions that people will be needing to consider that are perhaps a little bit different. And the key thing with resilience is if you go into it with that resilience mindset, then by following a standard process, identify the risks, see how bad they are, and think about how to manage them, it begins to take a very clear and structured approach. And coming all the way back to the question that you asked me at the beginning about three pieces of advice, one of my key pieces of advice is that know that as a risk manager, you already have the tools in your toolkit to manage ESG. It's like ESG is just the new COVID or the new cyber. And by taking that structured approach where you identify the risks in your risk register, you then think about how to manage each of them, and then you take a prioritization to see them through, you will be able to see through this ESG journey. And some of the things that are happening in the background, it's probably worthwhile mentioning, are that people like the UK government are busy putting in place new standards for property flood resilience. So if you're a business and you're struggling to get insurance because you have flood risk today, and it's actually getting worse under climate, all is not lost. There are really great new codes of practice out there for how you can begin to live with water and how you can demonstrate that to insurers. And that comes back to that evidence piece I talked about with your second question, key performance indicators. If you were able to say that 90% of your facilities have a full flood resilience program in place, that speaks volumes to insurers about your commitment to being able to deal with this, not just today, but in the future. And so I think one of these things that I want to draw out here is resilience being the key, and using and leveraging that knowledge that we all have of a good risk management process to really make sure that it feeds through. And at the end of it, that you have really good things that you can say you're doing very visibly that then weave into that outward facing ESG message.
Thank you very much indeed to Dr. Bervavan Adams. It's a huge subject. I'm sure we're going to be back on it very soon again. But for now, thank you very much and goodbye.